Hey there, welcome to ATL in 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. Atlanta hasn't been a terribly fascinating starting point over the first few days of free agency, but the Hawks did make a move. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording on a Sunday evening, maybe 2 days after the Hawks made a trade with the Houston Rockets. Glenn, what was the trade and what do you think of it?
So they got 2 second-round picks and a little bit of cash and Ty Washington and Osman Garuba. They were both first-round draft picks a couple years ago in a draft class that was kind of there's a lot of skepticism around that draft class kind of as a whole. But they're both interesting, I guess, defensive prospects. I think Garuba is more interesting to me. It's weird because when the Rockets went into that draft on their own, they were kind of on their way into or in the process of into kind of an unplanned rebuild, right? Harden forced his way out, and I'm not sure that their kind of front office was set up with kind of plans and evals and all the things that you would normally kind of want to really invest in to go into a rebuild. And so I look at how much the development of Washington and Garuba were prioritized, and I feel like there's really nothing to take away from that. Like Garuba played a lot of games last year, and he was a fascinating prospect in his draft class. And I'm excited about adding him to this roster. I think we've talked about the fact that they've got to find a way to kind of balance out this roster offense defense more so. He helps with that. Ty Washington is a guard. And so you typically need more some reliable offense from a guard in a way that you might not from a power forward center, right? And I don't know how close or far Ty might be from being able to give them enough of something on offense to kind of make him a real option. But he was in a weird situation in Houston, so I don't want to say he can't do it. I just want to say that he hasn't really, in my view, really shown the offensive kind of potential that you'd normally want to see, but he's still young. Garuba got a lot of kind of Draymond light comps, and when he was a draft prospect, it's funny, he's about exactly the same size as Onyeka and Bruno, and Bruno. Bruno's about profile's about the same as those guys too. And so, behind Clint for now, no, I can't imagine they probably don't carry all three of those guys onto the roster. Onyeka is going to be there. But Bruno plus Garuba, maybe not, but it's interesting because Garuba, like Onyeka, can kind of get out, switch on the guards, defend in space, use his length, he's got a good motor. Bruno's not quite that, but Bruno can has some ability to kind of get up to the level of the screen and things like that. So I try to read the tea leaves and think, okay, does this tell me something about which direction they're going to go on defense? Probably premature to try to speculate what the answer is, but I find it interesting in that way. So I'm really excited about Garuba. I'm interested to see what if Ty Tech can show something he hasn't had a chance to do in Houston, for example.
With Garuba, it obviously it seems like he can do a number of things on defense. Is there any way that he can contribute on offense? Because when I tried to watch, some of his games, I feel like we take for granted somebody like Clint Capela and how often he'll set a screen, roll hard, like just go. Garuba, it just seems like he's not, he's obviously not like a great shooter. He's obviously not a great ball handler. He's a center. He's played a lot of center. Most of his minutes in Houston have come at center. And then you watch him on offense, he'll set a screen and it's like, well, he just kind of lingers, or he'll do kind of like a soft roll. And it's like, well, it leaves me with some questions about how does he ever work in a competent offense without taking too much off the table. And so if he gets an offensive fit somewhere, what does it look like?
Yeah, well, I think he has some untapped ball handling and passing potential. If you watched him play in the Spanish League before he was drafted, that was actually something that was kind of considered a strength of his from the standpoint of potential, right? And I think he does have good hands, and I think he is kind of a good processor, at least showed that in a non-NBA context. So, you know, as they continue to kind of shape this roster, I continue to wonder, is Onyeka going to get to do a little bit more passing ball healing? Same for Jalen, you know. And depending upon who else is on the roster, you know, what is that going to look like? But if they're going to kind of run maybe some more five out, if they're going to run more complex pistol kind of centric action and kind of really mix up what they do with DHOs, I think Garuba is a prospect that can develop in that direction. And I think that could work. And so, yeah, the shooting's not there. I don't know that he's ever going to be kind of a dive man in the pick and roll. But when Trey's getting trapped, when Trey's, you know, or another point guard is seeing aggressive pick and roll coverage, I think he shows the potential to kind of function in ways that, say, Clint can't, you know, or a traditional center can't. So I don't know if that'll get there to the point that you let him do that a lot. He's young, but I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of flashes the potential that makes you think, yeah, maybe there's something there that can really make a difference.
Do you like this trade in terms of asset management?
I love it. It doesn't seem
like, obviously, they're giving up a whole lot, but they're, you know, using some trade exceptions.
Yeah, so I really like it. One of the reasons I like it is they sent out four or five, depending upon how you're counting, second round picks to get Bay. I think it's really four, I think. It's always hard to know exactly for sure sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they got two picks back to take these guys. And it's not like these are guys that are automatic cut guys, right? They're young guys that could be kind of dropped into a, you know, a developmental kind of system if they both are warrant the roster spot to do that. And so I like that. A couple of things. One is, if this core is going to be kept together, you know, probably next year they're going to be having to really think hard about going into the tax. Being kind of a top-heavy roster, second-round picks could really help you in that scenario, right? Another aspect is, let's say, for example, the Hawks are wanting to add one more guard, not kind of immediately put Kobe Bufkin into kind of the third or fourth guard slot in the rotation, and they want to go get DeLon, right? Like one or two second-round picks, you know, someone like DeLon, right? You've got those picks now that you can go make a move like that if you feel like that's the right, you know, move for your team. So whether you hang on to those picks and draft guys that can be 13, 14, 15 on your roster or go into a, you know, two-way, and now you get three two-way spots, I like them going out and getting these picks, and there's a number of different ways they could go with utilizing them.
You solicited some questions earlier today, and so they're kind of dovetailing with the questions that I want to ask you here. So let me field a couple here that kind of give you some fodder to respond to this. We have Chief Rocca asked three questions, but one of them was, is Ty Ty likely the backup point guard this year, knowing that role will primarily be played by DeJounte? And Grant Shirley asked a question, hard to know who they'll have to choose from until the trades are finalized, but, you know, it looks like they'll need to make some cuts soon. If there aren't any further moves, they're going to be short on roster spots. Who would you prioritize keeping out of the end of bench guys?
Go ahead. Yeah, so they can carry 20 through a day before the season starts, I think is I haven't read the whole new NBA and I haven't heard all the output in the NBA. I think that's, I don't know why that would be any different, but they can carry 20. So they got some time to work through this. They did extend a qualifying offer to Trent Forrest. Mm-hmm. And to me, when I look at Ty Ty, I think it's probably going to be him or Forrest, right? If you think about those guys giving guard depth, fourth or fifth guard, however you're looking at that, however you're counting guards, mm-hmm. I can't imagine there's room for both Forrest. Forrest could go back onto a two-way. That's what the qualifying offer was for. But Forrest might want just a better, you know, opportunity than that. So for me, I kind of look at Ty Ty and Forrest kind of probably competing for the same spot potentially, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think about, you know, Rudy Gay, who came in Utah. I think the Hawks might hope they can send that salary out if they, you know, that's a salary amount that they could bring back into the roster and not push themselves over the tax to kind of match salary with Rudy. So maybe that's a DeLon play or someone, you know, like that too, is sending salary out as opposed to a pick or salary plus a second round pick. I don't think Rudy Gay is probably on the roster when the season starts. I just don't see kind of the playing time for him. There's too much, too crowded at those positions. And so for me, the big one is, you know, Bruno has a new guarantee date of July 10. That's Monday, I think, a week from tomorrow. And that's, to me, that's a big one. That will tell us a little bit how the Hawks feel about Garuba, I think, and whether Garuba can be a third center on this roster or not. I know that some Hawks fans think that Muhammad Gay could be a center. I say absolutely not this year, you know. But I think Bruno will tell us a lot. My preference would be that they keep Bruno. But that's probably would require a couple things. One is, you know, both of their second round picks have to go in two ways to make room for them to keep Bruno plus Ty plus Garuba. And then that probably means that Veet is out and Tyrese Martin is out, unless Tyrese might convert to a two way himself, which would be a little bit unusual for him to go back to a two way. But I want to see how many kind of, you know, guys that end up on a two way. I know that, you know, we might see a two way signing, and then 10 days later, you see that guy drop for another two-way. You got coming into a two-way. So the way that they fill those three two-way spots is going to have a huge impact on who they can keep. If the second rounders go on two ways, I think there's more room to keep more of those guys. What do you think?
What do I think? I sort of think that Ty will have an early edge on Tyrese Martin. I sort of think, you know, if it comes down to something between Ty and Tyrese, I feel like I'm stuttering or something at this point, but I feel like, you know, they'll want to see some of Ty. I feel like, you know, the 2 second round picks, that Seth Lundy has a better chance of being a roster player for the Hawks this year than Muhammad Gay does. That doesn't mean that he necessarily has a longer term future. Maybe that's, you know, maybe, you know, if I had to pick for a longer term future, maybe I would pick Gay, but I think he's more of a project that they're going to be patient for.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, one of the things I'm curious to see, because, you know, you got to get all these things official starting July 6th, I think, with a quick turnaround shortly thereafter. Like, do they want Garuba and Ty to play any summer league if they could? Like, if they could have their druthers there, like if they could get all the contracts sorted out by them, would they like to see them in that setting? I would. Like, I think one of the nice things about Ty is, you know, light, the word light doesn't do it justice, you know, to call him Trae Young light or something like that. But like, I think, you know, he likes to use a screen and get into the middle of the floor the same way that Trae does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a fairly decent passer in that role. So, you know, if the other players on the summer league roster get used to playing with him in a summer league setting, that could be kind of useful, because, you know, they're getting the reps they need to get familiar with a situation that they're going to see more of.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then, I mean, I'd love to see all these guys at Summer League. And I mean, have they announced who's going to coach Summer League? I don't think I've seen that.
I have not. And I think they're doing like mini camp, I think, the next 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, July 3, 4, 5, I think it is. I'm expecting that we're going to hear the roster. You know, we're recording on a Sunday night, so I think it's coming Monday, but we'll have to see on that. Yeah. So I think, you know, the coach and the roster should be coming shortly. And, you know, the roster, like we said, is subject to change, because, you know, none of the trades, with a lot of end of roster guys in the making here shortly, they're not official. So it would take some tweaks and changes later on down the line to squeeze them in.
Yeah, one more guy I want to mention is they did guarantee Garrison Matthews' contract for the year. So I think he's an important player for them this next year. I'm not projecting him to be in the rotation all year long, but the size and the defense, he's a very competitive defender, even if not the most gifted. And he can shoot the ball, and he's got good size. And you know, it's kind of funny, you know, when I watch all this money Max Strus is getting, you know, I think about like Garrison Matthews and think, you know, is there a kind of a template there that kind of fits for Garrison? You know, it's kind of funny to think about that, because Strus came out of nowhere, you know, undrafted, and you know, went into that situation. And I think teams like him because he can shoot the ball and he's big. It's just kind of funny to think about who might be the next Max Strus. I don't know that it's really likely that kind of Matthews gets to that level, but you have to think what's that contract Strus is getting and going to Cleveland, and that sign and trade has to make different players around the league, kind of like Garrison and maybe a few others, think, oh man, maybe that's something I could pull off. You know, interesting to kind of see that.
Yeah, I think Strus is a whole lot bigger. It was interesting to see the money that he's going to be getting. I think he picked a situation that might be a really good fit for him. Mm-hmm. But you know, when I look at Garrison Matthews, while Joe Prunty seemed to be his guy kind of all season long, like that was sort of the assistant coach he was with all the time, I just think that he's more of a Quinn Snyder guy than a Nate McMillan guy. So
totally agree.
This just feels like 100% reset for him coming into a camp where Quinn Snyder is going to have the reins and have the play calling style from the beginning.
Yeah, I think
ostensibly to the end.
Yeah, I think he has a serious opportunity this season. Like I said, not to be in the rotation all year long, but to be kind of like one of the guys that's like the very next, you know, group of guys that can come in, need more shooting, got an injury, foul trouble, whatever the situation might be, a 3 games and 5 nights or whatever. I think he's going to get a number of opportunities this season. I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I agree. 11th man or something like that.
Sure.
All right, you want to field some of these other questions?
Yeah.
We got a number of questions, not surprisingly, about Pascal Siakam. So Jay Lane ATL asked, longtime hater, first time writer, can you explain the Siakam saga and what adjustments would need to be made to the roster to best utilize him? Also, at this point, is he too old? And I will start right now by saying, I don't know. I don't think he's too old to perform, but in my eyes, he's too old for the contract that he is about to get, which makes me a little bit nervous. But go ahead. I want to hear what you think about this.
Yeah, it's first of all, shouts to my good friend Josh there, and I'll talk some of this. He's snarky all the time. He has a great sense of humor. I enjoy. he's also a new dad and probably is still a little short on sleep. So. Hope everything is going great over there with the family, Josh. So for me, I think Siakam on paper, conceptually, however you want to say it, is a really fascinating fit with Trey. And maybe even a little bit DeJounte. I've always wanted to see threes and fours that when the ball rotates to them could just attack a seam, just boom, you know, just kind of go. And we know Quinn, you know, talks about that kind of dynamic as well, and with Siakam's length, that his ability to handle and make, you know, basic passes, and more than basic, you know, maybe average five assists a game or whatever, but but make the pass that's needed, right? In almost every case, I think he would be fascinating. The question for me is, number one, what is it worth to give up? What is your likelihood of having him on the roster after once he's going to be an unrestricted free agent in this next season? And so it just feels like a lot of uncertainty around all of that that would make me think, I don't think I would give up a ton to get him. And I think it would take a ton to get him. So it just feels unfeasible to me, right? For me, I'm like, yeah, you know, I had some conversation kind of going on in Twitter DMs and like, do you send out AJ in that trade? I don't send out AJ in a Pascal Siakam trade. Like, I love Jalen, but if you're going to send out one of the young guys, like, how's Jalen going to play really if you have Siakam and Hunter, assuming Hunter's not in the deal, plus Bay, you know? And so, you know, if I'm picking one, it's probably, you know, if they mandate one of your young guys, It's not Onyeka. For me, it's not AJ. And I love Jay. So I kind of vote don't make the trade based upon what I think it would entail. Now, if Pascal comes back and says, I'll do an extension. And it, you know, doesn't have to be kind of the full, you know, maximum amount of money and all of that. And, you know, stuff, you know, maybe that's different. Now, he's 29 years old. He'll be 30 when he's a free agent a year from now. And so he presumably is going to want 5 years, you know. But he came into the league as an older guy. And so he's not a guy at age 29 that already has like 9 full seasons on him, right? And so I'm a little less worried about the age. He takes great care of his body. He doesn't really have a noteworthy injury history and things like that. So, I mean, I love the idea of him being on the team. I'm trying to turn into a winner. He does a lot of things that can help you win games. I think it's just in terms of what it's going to cost to get him, the likelihood of retaining him, and also then, like, if DeJounte's still on this team, how do you take Trey, DeJounte, Siakam into salary stratosphere they're going to be in and still kind of manage what you need to do? That seems almost undoable. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think if there's a deal there, it almost certainly has to involve DeJounte.
Right.
I mean, I guess there could be a separate deal somewhere with another team, or it could be a three-way trade or something, but I don't see how you would make the salaries work. I don't see how you could possibly have Siakam and DeJounte both on the roster next year coming into a big payday, short platforms to their next big payday. Like, you, if you're making moves now to avoid the tax, how can you, you know, in any great shake have them both on the roster and not feel totally at a loss for leverage with other teams coming to the trade deadline who know that, hey, they got to get rid of somebody. It's going to be one of these two guys. I just can't see them both on the roster to start the season.
Yeah, and if you send out DeJounte and bring back Siakam, you know, are you running AJ and Bogey kind of really heavy minutes, you know, in the backcourt? You know, are you going to go find another guy that can kind of play that you don't have in your roster right now to make it happen and not send out DeJounte? Probably even a three-team trade's not enough. Probably takes 4 teams to kind of get that kind of flexibility if they're not going to send out DeJounte. So it is hard to imagine how that would go. On the Raptor side, how do you build a team around Jakob Poeltl, Scotty Barnes, DeJounte Murray, if that's what it is, and an OG Anunoby who wants a lot of on-ball opportunity? That just, I don't understand like the path Toronto would be going down in that scenario at all. So at least Siakam has some self-creation that OG doesn't have, you know.
Right.
I love Barnes as kind of a connective player, you know, and things like that, but not a shooter. And he still fouls a ton and not the most reliable ball handler or turnover prone. So I don't kind of understand it from the Raptor side unless they just feel like we don't want to own Pascal's next contract, you know, and that happens sometimes.
And to go back a little bit to what you said and to add a little bit to it, like, to me, I agree with you that if you're going to send somebody out, it would be Jalen. Like, if you look for somebody on the Hawks roster who most duplicates what Siakam does, I think it's Jalen. And so, you know, if you're trying to send someone out, you're going to take in Siakam. I could see sending out Jalen. But if you really believe that AJ is your guy and you want to get him to prime time as soon as possible, like, Siakam seems to me like the kind of player that you would want him next to. Like, I don't think DeAndre Absolutely. Hunter brings out the best. Like, I don't think DeAndre Hunter brings out the best in AJ as soon as possible, the way Siakam would, or the same for like DeJounte. Like, if you just need sort of the complementary skill set so that he can kind of play max minutes with Trey and with, you know, this theoretical Siakam, I think that's the best way that you could get the right two players around AJ on the floor to sort of maximize what he could do at this age and at this skill set. Like, I think AJ can do a lot, but I think that would be the platform to set him up best for success.
Totally agree. I think AJ should be a priority. I think he should be highly prioritized on all of these considerations. I think he has the opportunity to give them a really versatile juice as an offensive guard, and hopefully, you know, solid play defensively and beyond solid as it continues to grow and develop. But, you know, from the Hawks standpoint, to hit kind of the last part of Josh's question, you got Siakam on the team, you got to have Max shooting at 2 and 3, right? You need Bogey, you need AJ, you need probably Matthews, you need, you know, Buffman to come along as a shooter if he's not in the deal. Hunter is a good enough shooter. You got to get him to do it the right way in the Quinn offense if he's still on the team. And so if you got Siakam kind of just attacking defenders, attacking space on the weak side, attacking seams, you need shooting at 2 and 3. You need shooting, a lot of shooting. So Bay plus Bogey plus AJ plus Matthews plus, you know, Lundy, in terms of the current roster, you start kind of there. And then maybe, you know, if you have that, Trey gets a little bit more opportunity, buys into a little bit more opportunity, catch and shoot, you know, because he's excellent at that as well. So the last part there is if you do bring Siakam back, you got a max shooting at the shooting guard and small forward positions, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Other questions here. JF Willoughby, what do y'all make of Trey not making Team USA for FIBA?
I mean, in my mind, some people will argue, but no one of Trey's stature made that team. Like, right? People want to be like, oh, Halliburton. Halliburton had an awesome year last year. I love Halliburton, but he hasn't done that on a team that's, you know, going somewhere yet. He's done it for 1 year, right, as a starter. So yep. I want to see him back that up. People are going to say, oh, Jalen Brunson. Sorry, Jalen Brunson's not on Trey's level, in my opinion, right? And so, to me, there's a lot of kind of Class B's, you know, stars, up-and-coming guys. It's almost like right. Team USA wanted to kind of start to cultivate that next group of kind of players that are a little younger even than Trey right now. You know, I mean, I know that Bridges is about the same age and Brunson's about the same age. And there's a few other guys kind of, you got, you know, Banchero in there. You got Austin Reeves, who's started, 30 games in his imprint. I don't know what the number is. So they got a lot of guys that are just kind of pretty new to their stature in the NBA. I'd love to, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to do a presser and kind of explain this is why we went in this direction. I know Hawks fans are disappointed not seeing Trey on there. I know Trey wanted to be on there by all of his comments, you know. And so I understand all of that, but it's just, you look at that roster and it's like, there's no real like serious, like upper echelon star power. And I think of Trey in that echelon and so it's almost like they were not going for that when I look at the roster.
Yeah. It feels to me like it's either a really big deal or a really a nothing thing. Like either it got to a point where maybe he realized, okay, this isn't the team that I was really shooting for. And, you know, like you said, they're queuing up the next generation, or they really made a bad mistake. And if they're going to feel bad about it later. Cause like Dre obviously would help that team, but yeah, I don't know. It's curious one way or the other. I don't feel sure enough. Like I, you know, it seems sort of deliberate, but if it was just sort of, an accidental move to leave him off, even though he wanted to be on Bowie. That's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think somehow when you phrased the question, you talked about things that happened in the off season. And I don't know that this is necessarily an off season happening, but I do think it matters when you're trying to sort of roster build with the pieces that are here now and John being traded and such. So I guess it fits in that way. And this is a question from Dante from the 404. He kind of gives you an either or here, but I would say leave it open here. Is DeAndre's poor rebounding a result of a psychological lack of tenacity or is it technique? Can he play the four? Like, you know, what do you see here from DeAndre Hunter as a rebounder? And is that somehow a limitation on him taking some of the minutes that might be open at the power forward spot when the season starts?
Yeah, I love the question. It's a great question. Thank you. You said Dante was the question from. So for me, and I always I feel like I have to remind people, like, my educational background is in psychology. I have a bachelor of science degree in psychology, studied a lot of, you know, human development, personality, et cetera, right? And for me, when I watch DeAndre play, I think he's just a very cerebral person and not a very instinctive guy. You know, I think he's, like, when you watch him on offense, it's repetitions, jab left, tack right. You know, it's very, it's, we talked about, it's kind of very mechanical. And I just think he plays kind of with his head a lot, which is not a bad thing. You can be very successful doing that. He's super smart on defense at this point in his career, really seeing things, knowing when to help, knowing when to, yeah, I mean, no, I mean, you'll hear him, like, when he's on the weak side wing on defense yelling, go, 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 telling a guy to go double. Well, that's not, that's a call completely up to DeAndre. And so he sees and reads a ton of great stuff on defense, and he's smart. But when it comes to, like, oh, there's the ball, like, having that kind of quick fire instinct to just kind of go get the ball, it just, he looks like a guy who's not there. So I think it's the human being. I think it's his personality. I think it's just kind of his biology is just not wired for kind of, you know, really just pouncing on an opportunity through sheer instinct, right? And that's what I see. So can he play at the four? I think if he and Jalen are playing together, I like that. Jalen's an awesome rebounder. If Garuba at the five is a really good rebounder, at least he has been in other settings. And so it depends on kind of your lineup construction. Can, we've talked about this a little bit, can DeJounte, you know, do more as a rebounder if he's in lineups that kind of call for him to do that? He played a lot with Clint last year, and the whole team just kind of lets Clint rebound. Understandably, he's one of the most dominant rebounders in the league. And so for me, I don't think DeAndre is wired to kind of be the rebounding type you want at the four, but I think he has a lot of other stuff to offer at the four, and lineup construction can make that work, in my opinion.
I would offer a small defense of DeAndre, and this might be a good segue to another question that seemed to come up over and over again, but in my eyes, you know, when you're on the defensive end of the floor and you're thinking, okay, you know, we've got these five players who can rebound, if there's a miss, you know, I think the hardest position to rebound from is the one where you're guarding the ball, where you're guarding at the point of the attack. So, you know, with the Hawks being as reliant as they are on DeAndre to be their ball stopper, to be the one who's sort of guarding the best players, guarding the ball, I think that puts him in a position where it's a little bit harder to rebound than if he was, you know, maybe guarding the second most likely person to be, you know, trying to initiate the offense. Like, it's easier to rebound defensively as a help player than as sort of the on-ball guy.
Yeah. I must say, like, his growth as a help defender, I'd like to see them take the roster in a direction where he can do more of that. I think it would also help him injury-wise to not be chasing over screens and fighting through screens all the time. Brad and I had a conversation about how NBA teams have got to, in my mind, stop pushing these big wings towards, you know, that role where they defend guards. Like, how much time has Kawhi missed? OG, Oden, and Anunoby has missed time. We can go on and on and on. And Hunter was a point guard defender basically his first 3 years. Spent a lot of time as a point guard defender fighting over screens. I think these really big guys set themselves up for a lot of lower body injuries. And it's funny because his first year's league, he was terrible off ball. We get lost all the time, kind of, you know, seem to kind of zone out or whatever. And now he's borderline elite at that. He's really good at organizing. He's really good at coming down to the paint and kind of functioning kind of as a emergency center, you know, when rotations happen and things like that. He's so good at that. So I don't know that this roster is close to being able to kind of take him away from taking a primary defensive assignment on one of the team's other kind of primary guys. But I think that this team would be better to be able to kind of mix and match DeAndre's defensive responsibility between on ball and kind of help organizer. And I'd love to see a lot more of the latter if they can kind of find the right kind of mix of players to kind of alleviate so much of the demand of having DeAndre on ball. And DeAndre on ball is probably a B-plus guy on ball at this point, maybe, you know. And so he's not even kind of elite. He's better as a help defender and organizer in my mind than he is on ball. Even though he's good enough on ball to kind of be trusted with that responsibility, I just don't think a good team as DeAndre is the guy you are putting into that role every single game and taking the other guy's primary guy. I don't think that's the way to kind of engineer a 55-win team in my view.
Here's a question from somebody whose handle is Jonesy2x4.
Who? Are we taking questions from four former co-hosts of yours? Are we doing that?
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay.
Picking up where we were just talking about, are the Hawks seriously not going to address the point of attack defense? And you know,
you want to take other that
than the
first?
Other than the point of attack defense, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
You want to take a first shot at that one?
Oh my. I mean, I don't think they're going to address it. I think they addressed it a little bit last season in the sense that when Quinn Snyder took over, he's like recognized we need Jalen Johnson. So barring future moves here, Jalen's going to play a lot more minutes than he did last year. Like, that's just happening. And that's another point of attack defender that you really didn't have last year. And I think that they will fit the complementary pieces around him better than they did in a sense where he just had to pick up mid-season and mid-season and then sort of plug and play and get Jalen in there as best as he could, no matter whether it was a situation that suited him best or not. So that's, to me, the only thing that they're going to do. Like, none of these other moves have really addressed it. You know, Kobe Bufkin is, you know, I don't think he's going to be that, be the owner of that big of a role this season, and or won't matter that much on point of attack defense. So I can't really see it being addressed. Like, it's, you're looking at Hunter and Jalen Johnson and hopefully a top three offense.
or Kevin.
Yeah.
They switch a lot. All right. So you got Bay's going to have to play a lot of, Bay should play a lot of minutes on this team. Bogey should play a lot of minutes on this team. We saw what happened to Trey when they went from second in spot up efficiency to 29th, and that killed him statistically and really made his job so much harder. Those guys have to play. We talked about AJ having a bigger role, right? And if that's going to be kind of guys who are getting heavy minutes at 2, 3, maybe a little bit of 4, you know, depending upon how this all, the final roster shakes out, I'm super curious if they're just going to switch a lot. You know, that's what they had to do against Boston when at least when Hunter left the floor, right? When Bay came on, we're switching, right? And I said Bogey, Bay, AJ, you know, et cetera. Throw DeJounte in there too. I think DeJounte is, from what we saw last year, going to be better suited to switch and kind of deal with that as opposed to kind of, you know, chasing over screens and stuff, unless he's just going to go back to being more capable. I don't, that injury he had, I don't know how much that factors into what he has left in terms of kind of the defensive, you know, physical capacity now. It's hard to know how much is that his injury and all that sort of stuff. But it hasn't been the same since that injury, not even close. You know, he was an all NBA, you know, the all defensive kind of guy, you know, before that. And it just hasn't been the same. And it's just strange because we've only seen Quinn really in the context of having Rudy as the best drop big in the league, you know? And so, but I mean, and so when I asked the question, like, would Quinn buy into switch? He bought in against Boston, you know, and so, and Yeka, switchable, right? I think Bruno in small doses against other teams' second unit could probably handle some of that. Garuba on paper as a prospect, the potential that's there can handle that. And I don't want to say Clint can't switch. I just think he's going to lose a little bit of that juice every year, right? Just it diminishes a little bit as he gets older and more mileage, you know, and just right. Kind of the injuries, kind of the nagging injuries he has just kind of eats a little bit away there. But I don't think that's to say that he can't at all. And if we kind of think about this kind of defensive journey under you know, Lloyd Pierce, they mixed up their defensive coverage a lot. When they switched, it was tended to be 1-3-4 with the call of red scheme. What Lloyd Pierce liked to call a red scheme. Under Nate really didn't want to switch until last year. They switched a lot, kind of last year, and considering Nate was their head coach, you know. And then when Quinn came in, it was, they were kind of feeling for the scheme that was going to work for them in the playoffs. And a lot of people get mad. AJ didn't play when Quinn got here. Quinn doesn't like AJ. Baloney, right? Quinn was trying to get his team ready for the playoffs. AJ wasn't going to be in the rotation. They were trying to hammer out, like, this is how we're going to play. This is how we're going to play. This is how we're going to play. So when I look at this roster, I'm like, how do you survive on defense without switching, like, at least half the time? That's what I see. I wonder if that's what Quinn is thinking or Quinn has other ideas.
But you already touched on my question, which is there anything in Quinn Snyder's background that suggests that that's something he's going to do? Like, we talked about, or you talked about Rudy, and I was certainly thinking it. Like, what, you know, we've got the chicken and egg problem. Did he not switch because he had Rudy? Like, but is there anything in, like, Utah bench lineups or things he did at Missouri, things he did as an assistant coach, you know, that maybe suggest that's something that he's comfortable with?
Yeah, well, I mean, so, like, when he spent 1 year with Bud in Atlanta, is that right?
Yeah, that was a blitzing defense that they really used.
But it was also kind of a read-based defense too, right? I mean, yeah. Millsap and Horford called a lot of that. Like, they didn't always automatically blitz things. They right. would, like, be more aggressive, less aggressive, be two steps away from the, you know. And so there was a lot of reads that were based around there. So he was an assistant coach, but he certainly saw that and helped coach that. And when I think of Onyeka, I see that type of kind of defensive optionality with him, where you get him all the way up in blitz, get him all the way to the level of the screen, provide a little bit of support, show clear, get back, be one step within two steps, high drop, you know, high wall, you know, all of those things are kind of in play. And they are with Clint, but like I said, some of those more aggressive things, he just loses a little bit of his kind of the physical capacity to do that. And so I'm thinking, like, if the future is Onyeka, if the future is maybe Garuba, you know, it's hard. It's impossible to know how they actually feel about Garuba right now. So I don't want to put too much on it. Right? you know, but you know, there. I mean, there. I mean, Jalen played in the G League. He played a lot of center. You know, and so I mean,
yeah,
Jalen could be a guy that defends 2 through 5 or one through 5. Who knows? You know, and I think Bufkin could be a very switchable defender too when he's ready to go. You know, and so it's just gonna be fascinating to me, kind of to see how that goes and how they line that. I don't think they have nearly enough point of attack defense, but you can mitigate that to a degree if you switch well, if you have a team that's ready to really, really execute a good switching scheme. And we'll see if that's what Quinn wants to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talked earlier about not wanting to use DeAndre Hunter and other big wings at the point of attack as much as you do. I think that's sort of parallels how you would look at Clint. Like, you don't want to use him that high up or that much switching, but you might do it for 3 minutes at the end of the game. Like, it's not going to be an every game 48 minute kind of thing. It'll be, you know, can you pick and choose some spots in key situations?
Or Dame says plays for Miami and he's really got it going. You got to get your big up there to kind of really push Dame right. away from his spot, pick change spot. His angles, right? You know, so you know, kind of choosing those selectively. And not asking him to do it before. I think that's a great point.
Yeah. I had the next question in my mind, and somehow I have lost it. Wow. What was the other question? Oh, here it is. This is from God Loves ATL. What are your projections for the team this season? Do you think this roster is enough to keep Trey from leaving?
I mean, it's so hard to know. Like, does Miami get Dame, right? I said on Twitter, I think it was yesterday, that I don't think there's a team in the East that has significantly improved, right? I think Boston is interesting with Porzingis. I think we'll see how much the loss of Smart hurts them. I think a lot of that will come down to how much Cabrera can play. Milwaukee's mostly running it back. Philly's, who are they? We don't know. We don't have any idea right now what they are after a presumed Harden trade. You know, the Knicks had a wonderful year last year. I think did great adding DiVincenzo, but they haven't really added like this material piece. They'll get Josh Hart right. for a full year, which is presumably, which is great for them. And so for me, I think the East is kind of mostly what it was a year ago, unless pending the outcome of what happens with Miami, maybe getting Dame, Philly, maybe trading Harden. And so for that, and that, I think the Hawks right now, like I think if someone said 46, 47 wins, I'd say that feels about right. Could they do better than that? Sure, they could do better than that. How much will Quinn move the needle? Kind of a full year of Quinn moving the needle. I think that could be important. I think Quinn's one of the top 10 coaches in the league, in my view. The latter part around Trey, only Trey knows that, right? It's hard for me to kind of speak to that. But I feel like if you kind of read kind of what's happening, he wanted DeJounte. He said that. They got DeJounte, right? Some would say they overpaid to get DeJounte. And I think they paid a lot. I'll just say they paid a lot to get DeJounte. I'll leave it there, right? And and some would say, I have no idea how much truth there is, but some would say when Trey wanted a different coaching situation, he kind of got it, I have no clue if that's true or not, but it seems like Trey has voice in this situation. To me, it seems like, and I'll kind of marry this with another question that we heard was, what have we learned about this front office in this offseason? I'll try to find the handle that kind of submitted that one. But for me, I think what we've seen so far at the trade deadline last year and now this at the draft, number one, they're not going to panic themselves into a bad trade. Didn't do that on draft night. Did do that at the trade deadline last year. And big picture, right? I thought the Bay acquisition was big picture, right? I think even this Houston trade, big picture. I think getting Bruno and Garrison Matthews at the trade deadline, super big picture in terms of flexibility, non-guaranteed salary, but guys who could be viable depth pieces, And so I think I'm impressed with kind of the big picture focus here and not kind of forcing themselves towards we have to like go for it this year. No, we want to be good this year. We want to set ourselves up to have a better roster this year, but we also want to be lined up to be ready to make the moves we need in year two, year three, year four out. And so for me, I don't know what else Trey could want unless he just like wants to play in LA, wants to play in New York, wants to be in a bigger market. There's not much you can do about that. I mean, LA has a pretty good, pretty big NBA market anyway. But in terms of a team that's like always on national TV, think about LA and New York, maybe some of the, Texas, teams in Texas and Miami and stuff like that, teams that play on Christmas Day or something like that. But it's possible for me to know, but I it feels like I don't see like anything that's saying there's a flashing red light around Trey being committed to staying here. But only Trey knows like how he's feeling about this being the long-term place to be. That's my thought.
I have an optometrist.
Yeah.
And he looks a little bit like Duncan Robinson. And his name is actually Dr. Duncan.
Mm.
And I bring this up because, I think that the best thing that could happen for the Hawks in terms of sort of a long-term pitch for Trey is that this season the offense goes great. Like they need to have a top three, top two, top one kind of offense, which, adding Bay helps. If they could add one more, nice fitting role piece that gives them shooting and makes life easier for Trey while not taking too much off the table in other places, they could have a really nice offense. Like we saw what Bay did to make life easier for Trey in the playoffs on the offensive end. I think Trey has to go through this season. The reason I brought up the optometrist is that it has to be like that aha moment when you put on a pair of glasses that's like the right prescription after like having the wrong prescription for a long time. And all of a sudden you can see the leaves on the trees and you can see the bird hanging on the branch in the tree. And it's like, oh, everything's clear now. Like, the offense has to just give Trey this clear vision of this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. The offense works. We can be competitive on defense enough that, this season, it's, I think it's, you know, 7 seed, something like that. But if Trey gets that vision this season of, okay, I played under Quinn for a full season, the offense was great, we had a competitive team in the East, I really like this season, we're a couple of pieces away from being the team that I want to be. Like, I think that's sort of the best path forward to making this situation amenable to Trey.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think it's important. And I might take it, I don't know, one step further, see what you think, but I think of Trey this way. Trey for sure thinks of himself this way. He's an all-star level guy. He's an all-NBA level guy, right? He thinks of himself as that. And so if they're not putting him in a situation and not putting guys around him that can help him achieve that, I think that's where you start to lose kind of his investment, is you're not helping him, you know, have the guys around him that can help him make All-NBA, right? And so if he's missing all-star games, if he's maybe even like being the next guard, you know, on All-NBA, but if he's like the 11th guard, you know, in the voting results for All-NBA or whatever, I think that's where I start to see some risk and danger for him. Exactly. And the roster they put together this last year killed him statistically. You know, made his job way harder. And that's not necessarily about DeJounte. That's kind of more about no Gallo, John's shooting falling off, you know, kind of, you know, on and on. And I think Bay is absolutely massively important to him. I think Bogey's next 2 years or so, massively important. AJ being a priority, massively important. I think that can give Trey everything he needs to be back to, hey, is Trey in the conversation for best point guard in the league, you know? And I know some fans of other teams might kind of laugh at that, but he's really good. He's in that conversation when he has the right pieces around him, in my view. No doubt Trey thinks that.
Yep. Like, Trey is all about winning, but like, you look at the roster that they've had the past 3 seasons, they made the playoffs the past 3 seasons, but they were not championship rosters.
No.
Okay. So let's say this season, the Hawks are not a championship roster. It's hard to be a championship roster. You don't build it overnight. You got to build it year over year, get some continuity, add the right pieces and try to get there. But while Trey's all about winning and wants a championship, that's his goal. Like, in the meantime, he wants this other stuff. He's an entertainer at heart. He's a great offensive force. And, you know, he wants to be on the all-star team. He wants to sell shoes. He wants to be on Team USA. Like, he wants to do all of the superstar things while pursuing a championship. And so, you know, he doesn't want to just grind out and, you know, that he doesn't want to be fitted with a bunch of defensive only players where, you know, they kind of bash their heads in to get to a 6 seed.
Yeah, the Iverson model.
He doesn't want to do that, nor should he. Like,
exactly.
So they've got to make the situation palatable to him and then keep him long term and build towards the future. But I think the offense this season really is key.
It's not, for me, I would guess, it's not just about the awards and recognition and things like that. It's about having the respect of your peers. It's about having the recognition for what your talent level is and what your capability is. He's dynamic. He's awesome. And got to put him in a spot to be fully successful. The step one of this team being as good as they can be is Trey being as good as he can be, and that takes the right kind of building around him. And I think the roster is going in that direction.
Yeah, I agree. How far do you want to go with this? Do you want to keep fielding more questions?
One or two more, I think.
One or two more.
Yeah.
Let's try to pick some good ones here. Some of these overlap, so if we didn't cite your question, there may have been a similar question. How about this? What does Jalen Johnson need to work on to become a starting level forward? This is from I don't X and then 37608763. His answer is short mid-range scoring.
For me, it's just step one is consistency, right? I mean, we love what he can do in the open floor, handling, passing, creating, his speed, his long strides. We saw some flashes of what he can do on defense after Quinn came in and kind of gave him some different kinds of responsibilities. And there's just, I mean, he's just so exciting as a young player. Key questions, right? Can he kind of function in your team defense game in, game out? Can he play 22 minutes a game, whatever the number is going to be this year, right? And be solid possession after possession after possession in communication and connectedness and his responsibility and all that stuff, right? That's got to be there. And he showed great strides there. I don't really have any concern if that's not going to get there. But, you know, if he's going to be kind of, you know, one of the top three guys on this team, can he run a pick and roll? You know, I want to know that. Like, or is that just not what he's going to ask, to do? If he's just going to kind of, you know, operate in transition, function as a cutter, try to improve, become a corner shooter, three-point shooter, you know, maybe some, you know. So for me, it's like, how much can you do in the half court on offense? How dynamic, how versatile can you be in the half court on offense? For me, zero questions about what he can do in transition. It wouldn't surprise me 2 years from now if he's like a top five player in the league in terms of transition offense. Right? He's that dynamic. But in the half court, right? In the half court, there's a lot of development that's needed. And he needs repetitions to have an opportunity to develop the experience and the ability to kind of see a lot of different things and handle a lot of different things he's seeing. And so for me, the big trajectory setter for him is how much can he do in the half court offense? That's to me is what is kind of whether he's like, you know, a good fourth kind of piece on a good team or maybe like a top three piece on a good team. And there's a big difference between like the second best player, like the fourth best player on a really good team, you know, big difference there. And so for me, it's the half court offense. You know, I trust the defense to come along. I trust the coaching staff to handle that. It's the half court offense. Can you make open shots? Can you run some basic action on the weak side? Can you run a DHO and kind of make the right read, make the right play, make the right pass? I love him as a passer, so I think the passing will get there. But it's the half court offense. I think that's the really unknown part of his game to me.
Yeah, I agree. Like I agree, and weirdly, like I still don't necessarily love the fit with him and Clint Capela. Like I just, it doesn't seem like the greatest fit. And you know, for reasons of half court offense, I want to see him used in different roles. Like you said, I want to see him run a pick and roll. I want to see him be good in transition offense when he doesn't have the ball. I think he has a comfort zone with his back to the basket. Like I want to see him running out in transition when he doesn't have the ball. If there's a small person coming down with him, like can he get that quick seal in the middle of the lane and just get the ball there and try to get something that way? You know, I want to see him playing on the weak side with Onyeka and dribble handoff actions. What can he do there? I don't love the fit with him and Clinton. I want to see him used in more ways when Clint isn't out there. I think, you know, if Onyeka's minutes go up, that Jalen should go up accordingly. And I kind of want to see them paired. And like I said, I think last episode, I want to see Bay more with Capela if all things kind of stay the same on this roster.
Yeah, I think right now, you know, I was fortunate enough to get asked on in 1999 the game. I guess it was yesterday. I think it was yesterday, and they asked like, "Who's the starting lineup?" I said, "Right now, I would think that if we open tomorrow, Bay and Hunter are starting at four because it's four positions. I think Bay started.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
And so I think that's what's there. The other question I saw here I wanted to ask, and maybe I could tee it up for you first, @takeoff_Mikey. Besides point of attack defense, what is the roster's biggest weakness?
Besides point of attack defense. I mean, I guess... besides point of attack defense, what's the team's biggest weakness? I would say that it's I don't know how you would. I think you use the word connectivity. I think they need connectivity on offense. Like last season, when you had Collins, Hunter, and Capella together, like there just wasn't enough dynamism on offense. There wasn't enough passing on offense from the front court. Like I think Quinn wants a more continuous kind of offense with more ball movement, long maybe possessions with more passes and things like that. And I don't know that they have the front court to do that. Like I think the Jalen Onyeka fit that well. I don't know that Hunter, Bay, Capella, if those are like we just said that might be the starting front court. Like, how do you get that connectivity out of that group? I think some of it's going to fall on Bay. Like I think he has a little bit of potential in that department, but you know, he's going to need that off season under Quinn Snyder and that camp and preseason to kind of get some familiarity and know his role and know where he can add some of that. But I think that front court connectivity is a big thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope that with the new coaching staff, Onyeka gets some of his stuff unlocked a little bit. I think he can do a lot there. Jalen, I think as well, you talked about him and Onyeka, like maybe help him facilitate on the second unit. Some might say secondary creation. I think I think when people hear secondary creation, and I think that's an area they need more of. I think that's where AJ hopefully comes in. That's where Bupkin and Time hopefully kind of comes in and adds more there. But more specific is when Trey has to give the ball up, can the other four players have those connecting skills, the read, the pass, the cut, the, you know, all of that stuff? You know, I think of that as like the Horford stuff, you know, like, you know, just like popping into the space, to create the first pass and attacking from there. It's like in Millsap, you know, did that too. And that, you know, that 61 Hawks team, but that's the stuff where, for whatever reason, you know, under LP, they were trying to give Trey as many reps as possible. Right decision, right? Developmental-wise. Yep. Under Nate, they kind of swung more towards ISO. And it's way harder to do kind of those connecting skills coming out of an ISO, possession, in my view. So with Quinn, it's getting back to – and when you look at, like, the even if it's just rumors that may or may not be true, are they, you know, they moved John, right? Are they going to move Hunter, right? Are they going to move Clint? You know, don't know how real any of that stuff is at this point anymore. But, you know, bringing in Bay, you know, drafting Bufkin, you know, raising AJ's, you know, you can see that's where Quinn wants to go, right? And when you looked at, like, he played Bogey and Bay together in that Miami playing game a ton, right? And because he knew, like, Trey's going to have no space if I don't put at least two shooters on the floor. And so the spacing, I think they've taken a big step forward in the spacing, but that's different. And it's a great place. Different from, you know, they forced the ball to Trey's hands. Trey can't even get, you know, to his screen because they blitzed him or doubled him or trapped him or whatever. Can we play 4-on-3? Right? Do we have that? And I'm curious, like, and Onyeka, does Onyeka really get empowered in that area? Jalen, if Gru is going to play down the line, I think he has some of that juice too. AJ, it's, you know, running that stuff, two-man stuff on the weak side. I think that's where that's the next area to take a big step forward. That would really, that's to me what moves them from like a 45, 46, 47 win team to low 50s, is being able to kind of do that. So I think that's a great call. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I guess I think the thing that's massively important to this season is sort of getting Bay up to speed defensively, like, because they're going to need his offense and his defense. You know, it wasn't the ideal situation for him to look great defensively in his first half season in Atlanta, but now it's time and it's key. And so, you know, whatever they can do to get that going is going to be key. But all right, so we need to wrap up.
Yeah,
we didn't get to answer as many questions as well. Some of these questions, I'll say this. They're going to be as good in September as they are now. Like, they don't really have an expiration date, and I don't think things are going to change that much. So we may have to save some of these for the dead season when summer league is over.
Yeah, we'll do another round. But I mean, I'm still really excited about this team. I know there are some Hawks fans who wish they were kind of doing something bigger. I think they're doing the right thing. I think a lot of the improvement is going to come from internal development and freeing up playing time for the young guys that show a lot of potential. I think if there's another really helpful move out there, that they'll try to line up to do that. I still think this is an exciting team. You know, even though they, you know, we talked about the JC loss, they're gonna fill that in some important areas, but it's the organization's responsibility to, you know, push them towards the things that they need to do to kind of, you know, fill in for those gaps that JC's absence will create. You know, I think this is one of the most. I mean, you never for right now, you know, you'll never hear it on ESPN. You'll never whatever. You know, you'll never hear it on the national. This is one of the most exciting young teams in the league, in my mind. I'll make another big move. I think this is exciting. I can't wait to watch AJ, Jalen, and Yucca in this next year. I can't wait to watch a whole year of Bay with Trey. Can't wait for a whole year of Quinn. I think this is an exciting team. I'm excited. I don't know if they're going to win like 52, 53 games or not. I don't know. But I'm excited about this team.
All right. Well, very good. And I guess now it's time to say goodnight, Bob.
Good night, Bob.
Thank you, Bob, for your question on stochastic processes, but we're not answering that one.
Yeah, I got my thesaurus right here ready to look that one up. I guess the dictionary would be the one to go through there, but you know.
Encyclopedias, you're old enough for your, you probably still have one, right?
Yeah, he's using a Landry type word there very much on purpose, right?
I think that was the objective. And still not answering.
Mission accomplished. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Bob.